Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. December makes us want to pull out some of our performances that we did at the various ART Christmas parties. Here's one of our latest adaptations from a story called Crumbs at Christmas.
American Radio Theater presents an original holiday horror story, Crumbs at Midnight, written by David Templeton, adapted and directed by Greg Porter.
What happened on Christmas Eve, just as the clock struck midnight. It took place 1 year ago this very night. I know, because I was there and saw it all. And believe me, it was terrible. And it was scary, and it was strange. It was also messy. Incredibly messy. And it's going to happen again tonight. There were six of us then. The angel, the reindeer, and the cute little star were sugar cookies. They were all sweet, but the angel was the sweetest, with a little wire halo and twice as much icing as the rest of us. There was a chocolate chip snowman, a little crusty around the edges, but still a pretty smart cookie. And there was a shortbread teddy bear, flaky on the outside, but tough in all the right places. And then there was me, the gingerbread man. We were all piled together on a big plate in the living room where it was gloomy and dark. The fireplace had dwindled to a faint glimmer, and the only other light came from the little sparkly bulbs on the Christmas tree. It was almost midnight. The house was locked up, and the dog had been put away for the evening, and the people had all gone off to bed. It was very, very quiet. Having determined that it was safe, we all sat up and looked around. We were alone, just six warm cookies resting on the great plate, which we noticed we'd been sharing with a large carrot. A carrot? Must have been some kind of mistake. Next to the plate, there was a big glass of milk, and on the table beside the glass was a piece of paper with words scribbled in thick red crayon.
Dear Santa, the carrot is for Rudolph, but these are for you. Merry Christmas!
If only we'd realized what those mysterious words had meant. If only we'd run away and hid ourselves the moment we saw them, things might have turned out differently. But we didn't know anything. The snowman was dancing a jig on the tabletop. The reindeer was giving rides to the little star and the teddy bear. The angel, reluctant to leave the big plate, was warning the others to be careful. Me? I was eager to learn more about where we were and why, so I stepped away to check things out. But I never had a chance to study the room because suddenly, from high above us, a raspy little voice called out.
The fireplace! Watch the fireplace! At the stroke of midnight, it'll happen. It'll come down the chimney. It'll come through the fireplace. And there'll be nothing left but crumbs, crumbs all over the carpet.
Alarmed, we gathered on the big plate, huddling close as we stared up at the Christmas tree where the voice had come from. Dangling from a branch about 5 feet up, there was an old ornament, an ancient, half-crumbling Christmas bangle, gazing forlornly down at the six of us. He was handmade, crafted into the shape of a Christmas cookie. A gingerbread man, to be exact.
What do you mean, old ornament? What will be coming through the fireplace?
Oh, it's hard to say what it is, but it happens every year at the stroke of midnight. It's always big, it's always red, it's always hungry, and it'll be coming straight for you.
All the cookies began to murmur and wonder aloud.
What kind of thing could it be?
What kind of creature is so big and so red and so hungry?
What kind of monster would eat cookies?
And what are we going to do? It's almost midnight.
It was indeed just 1 minute until midnight. The old ornament from up in the tree merely shook his head, repeating the terrible words.
Crumbs. Nothing but crumbs.
We'll fight it then.
We'll teach it a lesson.
We'll chase it right back up the chimney.
Just then the angel interjected.
No, we should just stay on the big plate, right where they put us. What do we know? We're only cookies. If we stay on the plate, we're certain to be safe.
Oh, what should we do?
But before anyone could answer, the clock gave the first of 12 long, loud chimes. The second chime had barely faded in our ears when a brilliant, reddish glow began growing brighter and brighter inside the fireplace. We heard a rustling, scuffling sound and the ringing of tiny little bells. Yes, something was coming, and coming fast, right down the chimney. The clock struck 3. Run! I shouted. In a flash, I raced across the table. Stopping at the very edge, I peered over, staring in dismay at the carpet more than 2.5 feet below. As the little star ran about in circles, the reindeer and the snowman crowded in close behind at the edge, but there was nowhere for any of us to go. The clock struck 5.
Everyone back on the plate. We were put on this plate for a reason.
The clock struck 6. The teddy bear, frantically glancing over its shoulder at the fireplace, ran toward the rest of us, right up to where we stood cowering at the edge. But he wasn't looking, and crashed into us with a mighty thump, sending the reindeer, the snowman, and me right over the side. We fell to the carpet with a crunch. Fortunately, the carpet was soft enough to break our fall, and the snowman and I weren't seriously injured. The reindeer, however, was wounded. One antler had been snapped off with a crisp pop. As the clock struck 8, I spied a bit of space beneath the sofa, and as fast as I could, I led a charge across the floor, past the tree, toward the safety of the sofa. But the teddy bear and the star were still stranded on the table, as the sounds from the fireplace were growing louder and louder. Jump! I shouted. Jump! I'd reached the sofa. As my two companions slipped under and out of sight, the clock struck 11. Terrified, the little star closed its eyes and leaped from the table, but as it landed, it began to roll in a wide, looping curve that turned away from the table and ran straight toward the fireplace. Finally, it came wobbling to a stop. The cookie opened its eyes and yelped. Seeing that it was too far from the sofa all the way across the room, the star spied a fallen stocking lying beside her and ducked inside as the clock struck 12. Up on the table, the angel lay perfectly still, while the teddy bear flung himself down beside the glass of milk, pulling the paper note up over himself like a blanket. I watched all of this in horror, but there was nothing I could do. I ducked under the sofa with the reindeer and the snowman, trying to stay out of sight. From where we hid, we could see the table, the bottom of the tree, and the fireplace. The 12th chime was still singing in the air when suddenly, in a roar of sound and a puff of light, a monster, part mammoth, part mountain, slid down the chimney and out into the room. The enormous man carried a huge bag, packed full of things that clicked and jingled. As he stood to his full height, I saw that he was everything the old ornament had said he would be. He was big, he was red, and he was hungry. After dropping the sack on the ground, not far from where we were hiding, the enormous man turned to survey the room. Almost immediately, he saw the table, the plate, and the cookie. With one mighty step, the thing moved forward, leaned over the plate, and snatched up the angel, lifting it to its face to examine it closely. And then he bit off its head. An explosion of crumbs scattered over the table, and the little wire halo popped into the air and went spinning down, bouncing off the table and onto the floor, where it skittered toward the sofa. Not noticing, the enormous man took another bite, and another. And by the time the little wire halo had slid to a halt, not 2 inches from where we were hiding, the angel was all gone.
So much for staying on the plate.
That sugar cookie never had a chance.
Shh, I whispered. If we all stay hidden, it might just go away. But the enormous man wasn't going anywhere. He was still hungry. He was scanning the table, searching for more cookies. Picking up the plate, he peered beneath it. Then he stepped back and leaned over to examine something at his feet. In the same instant that he saw it, I saw it too. A little pile of crumbs on the carpet, in the same spot where we had fallen from the table. The crumbs belonged to the reindeer. He must have shed them when he lost the antler. With a shock of realization, I saw that a thin trail of crumbs led away from that spot and snaked across the carpet to where we were now crouching. On his hands and knees now, the enormous man was crawling, following the trail of crumbs. In a few seconds, he would find us. Unexpectedly, a loud, shrill clanking sound erupted from the direction of the table. The dog started barking somewhere deep inside the house, and the enormous man stopped crawling. I beckoned to the reindeer and snowman, pointing to the giant sack that was now resting between the sofa and the tree. It was our only chance, so we dashed out into the open and climbed beneath the sack. Distracted by the odd noises, the enormous man hadn't seen a thing, but I could see everything. On the table, the shortbread teddy bear was banging loudly on the glass of milk, using the carrot as a drumstick. The bear was trying to draw the enormous man away from us, risking his life so that we could get away. He was a brave cookie, I'll tell you that. Seeing that the enormous man had stopped searching for us, the teddy bear clutched the carrot and jumped behind the tall glass. Unable to hide there for long, knowing that he had but a few seconds, the bear made a last desperate attempt to save himself. He stepped out onto the table and, using the carrot as a stick, vaulted up into the air and dropped down into the glass of milk, just as the enormous man stood up and turned back to face the table. Who knows how long that cookie might have lasted in there? A minute or two? Long enough to stay out of sight until the monster went away, that's possible. But it didn't matter, because now the enormous man was thirsty. He reached for the glass of milk, lifted it to his lips, and guzzled with gusto. Down went the bear, icing and all. Everything after that was a blur. How did the reindeer finally perish? I can barely remember. He was uncovered when the enormous man emptied the sack of packages and found him hiding there. All I remember is the mighty crunch that shook the night, and the spattering of crumbs that dusted the floor. The little star might have survived had the big hungry man not discovered him in the stocking while filling it with nuts and trinkets. And the snowman? Well, the snowman's end was the biggest surprise of all. The reindeer and the star were already gone, eaten by the enormous man. Determined that at least two of us would survive, I ducked behind the packages that had been left under the tree, and I looked around for the snowman. Having escaped from under the sack while the enormous man was drinking the shortbread teddy bear, the snowman had discovered a way out. There was a hallway, long and dark, leading away from the living room, far from the awful crumb bath that was taking place. The snowman stopped at the entrance of the hall and turned to face me, beckoning for me to follow. He never saw it coming. From out of the depths of the darkened hall, the dog appeared. A mastiff, I think, or perhaps a chihuahua. What do I know about dogs? I'm just a gingerbread man. Without even stopping, the dog rushed upon the snowman from behind and gobbled him without even swallowing. From up in the tree, I could hear the old ornament mournfully muttering.
Every year the same. The dog always gets the one with the chocolate chips.
I was the last cookie standing. Nearly paralyzed with dread and disbelief, I ducked back behind the packages. The dog trotted happily back up the hallway and disappeared into the darkness. I sat listening to the noises of the room. There was nothing but the ticking of the clock and the sizzle of the coals in the fireplace. From somewhere far away, I heard a faint jingling. Still, I waited until I was certain that I was finally alone, finally safe. And then the clock struck. It was 1 a.m. The midnight hour was over. With a sigh of relief, I collapsed onto the carpet. But without warning, the packages suddenly parted all around me, flung aside by big gloved hands, and there in front of me, smiling with glee, was the enormous man.
Aha!
Before I could move, he'd grabbed me. Those giant hands wrapped themselves around my middle, and I was brought closer and closer to his face, bearded and rosy-cheeked, with a mouth that was opening wider and wider. The mouth closed around me, and I knew it was all over. But suddenly I was out again. A bit moist, but otherwise unharmed. The enormous man was holding me out at arm's length, eyeing me suspiciously as an expression of disappointment appeared across his face.
Gingerbread? I hate gingerbread.
With that, he set me back down among the packages and jumped away. I heard a final jingle of little bells and a whoosh like a warm wind up the chimney and nothing more. When I finally found the courage to look again, the enormous man was gone. And he'd taken the carrot with him. I was safe at last. Or was I? If I learned anything from that long, terrible Christmas night, it is this. In a world such as this one, no cookie is ever safe. And there are worse dangers than hungry dogs and enormous men. There are children. There are mothers and fathers, aunts and uncles. They all eat cookies, and they'll never stop. The old ornament explained it all to me. He told me of the night so many years before when he, too, had survived the enormous man. Yes, the old ornament was once a gingerbread cookie. He, too, was left on the plate to be eaten at midnight. And having survived, he realized that, with sunrise, others would come, perhaps not so big and not so red, but hungry nevertheless. So do you know what he did? He climbed into the towering tree and, with a spare piece of wire, made himself a little hook. To the people, he was just another Christmas ornament to be packed away with the lights and the bangles. Each year since then, he's been brought out and hung once more in the tree, and each time he has watched as the same events happen again. Now, there are 2 gingerbread ornaments hanging in this tree. It was easy. With the wire from the angel's little halo, I made a sturdy hook, found a good branch high up, and that was that. It was 1 year ago that I gave up being a cookie and became a Christmas tree ornament. 1 year ago, this very night. So the question is, what are you going to do, little cookies? You shortbread bears and sugar cookie angels and crusty snowmen, will you lie there on the plate and wait to see if my story is true? Wait to see if the carpet is covered once again in 1,000 crumbs? Or will you believe me? Will you get up now and run? Run, run for your lives? Whatever you decide, you'd better decide now. Because, my little cookies, the clock is about to strike. It's midnight, and here comes Santa Claus.
Crumbs at Midnight, an original holiday horror story, was written by David Templeton and adapted and directed for American Radio Theater's 2013 holiday party by Greg Porter, whom you heard as your narrator, the Fresh Gingerbread Man. Others in the cast, including the following sweet cookies: Bob Perks as the teddy bear, Rhea Lutton as the reindeer, Kay Lutz as the star, Ken Lease as the snowman, Kim Turner as the angel, Dan Schindler as the old ornamental gingerbread man, Beth Schlansky as the note to Santa, and Michael Mokey O'Reilly as the old monster himself, Santa Claus. Live sound effects by Marilyn Wilt and Beth Schlansky. Recorded by Joy Jackson during ART's holiday party on December 7th, 2013 in Seattle. I'm Dave Lace, your announcer, and this is ART, American Radio Theater.
We follow that with one of our earliest recreations of a favorite radio show called The Cinnamon Bear. American Radio Theater has recorded a number of Cinnamon Bear episodes. They've been performed at the various Christmas parties being broadcast to Lexington. This one is my favorite, with Cole Hornaday as Patty O'Cinnamon.
Now I guess we're all pretty anxious to hear about Judy and Jimmy and their friends, Cinnamon Bear and Crazy Quilt Dragon.
Oh, goody. Maybe she can help us. Oh, where does Melissa live?
Oh, she lives in her palace in the capital of Maybeland. Capital M. A little southish of the Lollipop Mountains, right in the middle of the Marshmallow Meadows.
Maybe she'll know some way to have the star all put back together again.
I'm sure she will. Will you take us there, Crazy Quilt?
Certainly. I'm quite as good on land as on water.
Everybody help me pick up the pieces of the star. Jimmy, let me have your hanky. It's bigger than mine.
Okay, here it is.
Here are some pieces.
Yeah, and here are some more.
I think Jimmy and I have all the rest. Hold out your hanky, Jimmy.
Oh, okay.
There.
All right, now. Let's get started. Climb on, everybody.
Up you go, Judy. Up, Jimmy. Well, we're on. Outdo yourself, Crazy Quilt. Gallop as you've never galloped before.
Oh, here you are. So sorry to keep you waiting, but you know how it is. So much busy. Dear. Oh, you're not in court costume.
What's that?
It's what you wear when you come to see Queen Melissa.
Well, never mind. It can't be helped now. I'll ask her to overlook the attire, inasmuch as you are unacquainted with court etiquette.
Well, what does he mean?
He means that he's going to ask Melissa to skip it.
Oh, dear. Now, let's see. How will we arrange this? You're the Crazy Quilt Dragon, are you not? I'm sure I've seen you before. I'm very good at remembering places. I mean faces. That's my job. Now, where were we? Oh, yes, awfully nice of you to drop in and all that. Must come again sometime.
Well, I'm Judy.
I'm Jimmy.
And I'm the Cinnamon Bear.
That's us. We're very anxious to see Melissa. Is there anything special we have to do?
Oh, dear, yes. The bow, you know, the bow. So if you'd...
I feel awfully silly doing that.
You don't have to. Just be polite, and that's all that's necessary.
And of course, I must announce you. Now let's see what formation would look best. Let me see. The little girl first, yes. And then I think the boy slightly behind her with the bear. Then the crazy quilt dragon bringing up the rear guard.
Bringing up the what? Does he have to carry something?
Oh, no, 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 no. He's to stand behind you.
Well, why didn't you say that in the first place?
I dislike hurrying you, Grand Wonky, but our time is short and our business is very important. Now, you just sort of forget the formalities and announce us to Her Majesty like a good Wonky?
I think everything is in order. Do you mind if I adjust your green bow, little bear?
I thank you very much to keep your hands off me bow. And me name is Patio Cinnamon, if you please.
Oh, yes, 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 of course, of course. I think we may enter now.
Well, it's about time.
Ouvre la porte.
What's that mean? Ouvre, well, what you just said.
Well, that's French for open the door.
Well, why didn't you just say open the door instead of all that French stuff?
Because this happens to be a French door and won't open unless you speak French. So there.
Ouvre la porte.
My. Those hinges need oiling dreadfully. Must make a note about that. See about oil. All hinges. Now, are we all hunky-bunky?
Yes, Wonky.
Dudley, the fanfare! Oh, thank you, Dudley. That was lovely. Thank you. Now, friends, you may enter the presence of Queen Melissa of Maybeland.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't she beautiful, Jimmy?
You bet. Why, she's nearly as pretty as Mother, I'd say.
Just look at her throne. It's all shiny.
All gold, children. 18 carats, solid gold.
Looks like there's something shiny all about her, too. It must be more magic.
It is. That protects her from anything touching her. Nothing could get close enough to hurt her.
I sure never saw anything like this before.
Will you please come closer?
Her Majesty desires you to approach. Make sure you don't go too close. Your Majesty, may I present Miss Judy?
How do you do?
Fine, thanks, but we...
Mr. Jimmy?
I'm so happy to see you.
And we're glad to see you.
And this is...
The Crazy Quilt Dragon, of course. How are you?
Oh, very well, Your Majesty. Thank you.
And last but not least...
Well, who is this little fuzzy person with the green ribbon round his neck? Who are you, little friend?
I'm the Cinnamon Bear with the shoe button eyes, and I'm helping these children recover a prize. It's a silvery star that was fashioned, you see, from the very tip-top of a big Christmas tree. Though we've hunted low and we've hunted high, we cannot get it back no matter how we try. A most crazy quilt dragon made off with it first. Then a whale ate it up, but that wasn't the worst. Oh, it's been through 100 adventures since then. We just lose it and find it and lose it again. So we've looked and looked till we're almost blue. And if you'll help us out, we're much obliged to you.
So you see, Miss Your Majesty...
Call me Melissa, won't you? We're all going to be friends, and friends shouldn't be too formal.
Oh, that suits me. All of this Wonky business about bowing and everything.
I know how you feel, Jimmy, but I must give the Grand Wonky something to do. He'd feel very unhappy otherwise.
Oh, well, you see, Melissa, the Cinnamon Bear told you part about what happened to our lovely Silver Star, but lots of other things happened to it after that.
And the last thing was the Winter Green Witch cast a spell on me and forced me to steal the star and take it to her.
The Winter Green Witch? Grand Wonky, make a note that I must take up the case of the Winter Green Witch at my next council meeting. She's been practicing magic without a license.
Oh, dear, dear me. Yes, Your Majesty. Fix witch,
good and proper.
She was going to change us into things. And then I showed her a looking glass, and she got awful scared and let us go.
And Crazy Quilt took us across the root beer ocean, but...
But he sat down on the star and broke it into a dozen pieces.
So we thought maybe you could help us get it fixed?
Of course I can help you.
You can? Oh, that's wonderful.
Now you just listen very carefully to everything I say, and your silver star will be restored.
Well, that's quite the best news Jimmy and Judy have had since they started out on their adventure trip through Maybe Land. Let's be sure and listen next time and find out how Queen Melissa plans to get the broken silver star back into one piece.
You mean you can fix it so our silver star will be all together again and won't be broken like it is now?
That's exactly what I mean, Judy.
Jiminy crickets, and we'll be able to put it on our Christmas tree just like we used to?
On the very tippy top, Jimmy, and no one will ever know it was the least bit broken.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Now, I will have to write a few simple instructions for you to follow. Grand Wunky, would you please get me my magic ink?
Yes, Your Majesty.
We're awfully grateful, Melissa. We were just about to give up and go home.
You bet. And after all the things we did, you get the star, too.
Here's the magic ink, Your Majesty.
Thank you, Grand Wunky. And now I will write down the instructions for you to follow. There. Now I've put the instructions inside this envelope, Jimmy, and you must follow them exactly.
Oh, goody, let's see what we have to do.
Well, I'm sorry, Judy, but you mustn't open it here.
Well, why?
Because that would keep the magic from working. You see, restoring the Silver Star is going to take a special kind of magic. If it had been made in Maybe Land, it would be simple. But unfortunately, it was made in the world, and that's another matter. It will need quite a little extra work.
Will it be hard to do?
No, not hard, but you must do exactly as they say. And unfortunately, you can only read these instructions in total darkness.
But, Your Majesty, where can we find this absolute darkness?
Ah, that is part of the magic that you must do for yourselves. But don't worry, friends. I know it will work out all right.
Gee, Melissa, I don't know how we'll ever be able to thank you.
It'll just make Christmas perfect, Melissa.
Allow me to express my deepest thanks, Melissa, for past favors and present courtesy. I bow.
I'm not fancy, Melissa, but I'm much obliged to you.
And you are all quite welcome, dear friends. I hope you will visit me again after the Silver Star has been restored to its original beauty.
We'd sure like to, all right, Melissa.
Then do so. And now, Grand Wunky, would you please get our friends on their way? I would be happy to entertain you in my palace for a while, but I know you're anxious to see your star mended and safe.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks so much, but we have to hurry, kinda.
Yes, we've got to get it back before Christmas.
Well, goodbye then, and good luck.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Your Majesty. Would you please follow me, single file if you please, in the order in which you came in?
By the way, Wunky, old thing, could you drop us some slight hint as to where we might find this absolute darkness of which Melissa spoke?
I could hint. It's absolute. But my duties at Grand Wunky to Melissa's court keep me quite confined. Mm. I don't know a great deal about the country of Maybe Land at all, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, dear.
But I have heard... Now, mark you, this is only a rumor, and I cannot verify it in any way. I have heard that the Wishing Woods are very dark. Extremely dark, in fact.
Well, do you happen to know the way to the Wishing Woods?
Ooh, yes I do, I'm happy to say. I got a good many travel folders on it before I went on my vacation. But Mrs. Wonky decided she'd rather go to the Root Beer Seashore. Mm. And such a lovely time we had, too. Took a small...
Yes.
Oh, dear. Now, where was I?
You were going to tell us how to get to the Wishing Woods?
Oh, yes. So I was. Well, it won't take you very long. Not at all. They're directly north of the Marshmallow Meadows, as the crow doesn't fly.
Thanks, Wunky. Much obliged for the assistance.
Oh, don't ever mention it. Just pop along down the model staircase and straight ahead and... Dear. Almost forgot something. Here, this box is for you to take along with you.
What's in it, Wunky? Some more magic?
Oh, you'll find out when the time comes, and oh, here's the door. My, 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 I must see about oiling those hinges, mustn't I? Such a racket they make. Well, I've got to be zipping now. Charming of you to drop in. Dudley, fetch the oil can, my good fellow.
What a character! What a character! You'd never know he was around.
I thought he was sort of sweet, Crazy Quilt.
Oh, just a windbag, that's all. Well, we better get started, hadn't we?
You bet. Come on, everybody, let's find the Wishing Woods. I wonder if this is the Wishing Woods.
Oh, I'm sure it is. There's a sign over there that says Wishing Woods.
Oh, I'm so glad. Look, there's another sign. What does it say?
Wait a minute. It's printed a bit smaller. Oh, S.S. Crocodile. Esk.
What's Esk mean?
I suppose it means to Esk S.S. Crocodile.
Oh. Oh, I guess he spells like me.
Have you still got the broken pieces of the silver star in your hanky, Jimmy?
Yep, safe and sound.
Well, you have Melissa's instructions, too, so I think I better carry your hanky for you.
All right, here it is.
And now, shall we follow this little path? Seems to be as good as any. Maybe this crocodile person can give us some idea as to where it is. Totally dark in the Wishing Wood.
He might at that.
Yeah.
Cinnamon Bear, did you look in that box that the Grand Wunky gave you when we left the palace?
No. Why?
I was, well, just awful curious, that's all.
Well, there's no special orders about opening this, so here it goes.
Oh!
What is it? Oh, my stupid cinnamon buns.
Let me see. Oh, Jimmy! Peanut butter sandwiches and apple pie.
And lollipops, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, boy. Oh, this is swell.
Oh, here's a note. My dear friends, I hope you will enjoy your picnic lunch in the Wishing Woods. When you have finished, tie up the box again, and the next time you are hungry, open it, and you'll find another lunch. Love, Melissa.
Gee, Melissa sure is a peach, all right.
Well, well, far be it from me to call our gracious ruler by such a name, but she surely is kind and thoughtful.
Yummy. Such cinnamon buns. Chock full of currants, too.
I didn't know I was hungry, but I certainly was.
Oh, delicious. I'll tie up the box, just like she said.
Well there. Shall we be moving? Oh, I say, look ahead, down the path a bit.
My goodness, it's a bathtub.
Yeah, and it's a big white one, just like the one we have at home.
What a strange place for a bathtub.
What's that funny noise?
It's coming from the bathtub.
Well, so it is. There must be something in it.
You bless my stuffin'! It's a crocodile!
Oh, it must be the one on the sign, S.S. Crocodile-esque.
Welcome to the Wishing Woods. Who am I? I can see by the look in your eye. Why, I'm Snapper Snick, of course. By the way, who are you?
I'm Judy, Mr. What did you say your name was?
Snapper Snick, little girl. And who are the rest of you?
I'm Jimmy.
Patio Cinnamon, the Cinnamon Bear.
I'm the Crazy Quilt Dragon.
Well, so kind of you to come all this way to see me. I'm very glad you came today. There hasn't been a single person, and I was beginning to feel quite lonesome.
Well, you see.
Of course, I'm very comfortable with my bath, like my tub. Quite an acquisition it was. Very. I got it when they redecorated the royal bath last spring. Genuine porcelain with chromium taps.
That's very nice.
But you say one can't spend all one's time in the bath? Ha ha ha! That's because you never thought of the bath in all of its possibilities.
You are quite right, but...
Have you ever noticed the wonderful acoustics in the bathtub? Of course you haven't. Have you ever thought of bathtub singing as fine art? Again, you haven't. But Snickersnack has. Oh, yes, indeed. That's why I've remained hermit, as it were, in the midst of the wishing woods, perfecting my art until it could be heard in all its glory. Glory by the listening world. The first bathtub singer to be heard on the air. Oh, what a sensation. The bathtub alto. Snickersnack, the crooning crocodile.
But we didn't really ask.
But you didn't come to talk. You came to hear me sing. Isn't that right? Well, your wish is granted. I'll sing without delay.
Hey, we didn't come to see you.
You didn't? Well, why didn't you say so?
Assuring you didn't give us a chance.
These young people are on a very important mission.
Oh, indeed. And where did you come from?
Just now, we came from the Queen of Maybeland.
Oh, dear, dear Melissa. And how is she? Always so kind to me. Melissa is so kind. Lovely girl, don't you think?
She's awful nice, all right. She's going to help us fix our silver star.
What's a silver star?
Ours. It belongs on top of our Christmas tree. First it got lost.
Lost? And don't I know how you must feel, don't I, though? Last spring I lost my voice.
Congratulations.
What do you mean, congratulations? For days I was petrified. And then my beautiful voice came back twice as lovely as ever before. However, it's too bad you weren't here to notice the improvement. I'll demonstrate by singing my favorite number. That's why crocodiles were born, in the key of Q.
But we haven't time to listen. But besides, the star isn't lost anymore. We found it, and then it got broken into a dozen pieces.
And Melissa gave us some wonderful instructions so we can get it all back together again.
But they aren't to be read except in total darkness.
Ooh, most intriguing. May I take a squint?
Of course. They're right here in this envelope.
My, would you mind holding it a little closer? Broke my bifocals last week. Can't see worth anything, you know?
Well, there. You're sure to be able to see it now, Mr. Crocodile.
Ah, much better. Ah.
Hey. Careful with that!
Nom,
Why, I never!
Our magic instructions. He swallowed them.
Well, there seems to be a regular epidemic of swallowing things, doesn't there? First the wailing whale swallowed the silver star, then Crazy Quilt swallowed the whistle, which... Fee-Fo the Giant gave to Jimmy, and now Snapper Snick, the crooning crocodile, has up and swallowed Melissa's most valuable instructions. Looks mighty bad, all right, but let's be on hand next time to see what happens. This has been a special presentation by the American Radio Theater, directed by Joy Jackson. You heard Carl Hornaday as Patty O'Cinnamon, with Joy Jackson, Marge Lutton, Melinda Maines, Pat McNally, Beverly Poole, and Kim Turner. Sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. I'm Renaud LaBeouf.
Let's listen in to a portion from the Wrigley Christmas Party from December 25, 1944.
Jack Benny will be here shortly, and I have a lot to do. Now, would you... Well, come in.
Good afternoon. I represent Jack Benny, star of Stay Screen Radio, and don't throw away your Christmas cards. Mr. Benny can use them for wallpaper.
Why, it's Rochester.
I hope you'll pardon the intrusion, but Mr. Benny sent me over here to see if everything was all ready for him.
Oh, yes. We're trying to do everything we can to make Mr. Benny comfortable. After all, we just paid him $4 million.
My, my. CBS now stands for Cash and Benny Safe.
Hey, are you Jack Benny's valet?
That's right.
Well, that's a coincidence. I do the same thing for Gene Artery. I take care of his horse, Champion. Every morning I curry his hair till it shines real bright, walk him around to limber up his legs, check his teeth, and give him a shot to protect him from a hoof and mouth disease. What are you laughing at?
Every morning I do the same thing with Mr. Benny.
Hey, tell me something. Do you do his laundry, too?
No, you don't trust me with lace. But Mr. Benny claims the laundry's here charged too much, so he's got to move on to eliminate the middleman.
Well, where's his laundry now?
Between here and Honolulu on a slow boat to China.
Yeah, well, look, Mr. Rochester, I'm glad you're here. Before Mr. Benny can officially become a member of CBS, we have to fill out a standard questionnaire on him. Maybe you can help me do it.
I'd be glad to. Fire away.
Well, let's see. I'll just fill in the blanks. Name, Jack Benny. Now, the first question. Color of eyes.
Robin's egg blue.
Wouldn't just plain blue be enough?
When your accessories get as old as Mr. Benny's, the paint job is very important.
All right. Eyes, Robin's egg blue. And now, hair? Well, come, answer the question. Hair?
Just put down, when it comes to hair, Mr. Benny's running neck and neck with Prince Charlie.
All right, now, age?
39.
Oh, come now. What's Mr. Benny's actual age?
Well, I wouldn't say, but he's the only man I know who goes to the burlesque show just because he likes popcorn.
Well, I'm sure you're going to be very happy here at Melody Ranch.
Well, I don't know much about ranches.
Well, I'll be glad to help you out. I'll even teach you the Pat Buttram system of cow milking.
What's that?
Well, I put my three-cornered stool on the right side of the cow, and from there on, it's strictly knit one, purl two.
Well, I doubt if Mr. Benny will keep any livestock, but we want everything to be as comfortable as possible for him. Now about Mr. Phil Harris. Is there anything we might do to make his stay a pleasant one?
Yeah, just fix him a low chandelier with a bottle in it. You know, he took a four-way cold tablet yesterday and only one part got down sober.
Well, I think everything's in readiness, but Mr. Benny hasn't signed the contract yet. We're a little concerned. After all, it involves $4 million. What seems to be the trouble? Doesn't he want to sign it?
Yeah, but every time he sees that amount, he can't stop his hand from shaking.
Say, does this here fella Benny give you a nice Christmas?
Well, nobody dares bother the boss much around Christmas time. For a week, he just stands around with a piece of mistletoe over his head. He don't get many kisses, but he saves wear and tear on his toupee. He's known around Beverly Hills as the boy with the green hair.
Well, Mr. Artery is awful nice to me at Christmas time, and I sure appreciate it. You see, when I was a kid, we couldn't afford a Christmas tree. All we had was a tumbleweed with a tomato tied to it. And the first one down in the morning got the tomato.
Well, what did you find in your Christmas stocking this morning?
My feet. It was cold last night.
Well, speaking of Christmas, Mr. Rochester, I hope you listened to the Wrigley two-hour show this afternoon. Lionel Barrymore is going to play Scrooge.
Scrooge?
Yes, you know, the cold-hearted miser who clutches every nickel and makes life miserable for everyone because of his mean and selfish ways. You know him, don't you?
Know him? I work for him.
Well, I would like to get this matter cleared up about Mr. Benny's contract. Do you think you might call him on the phone and see if he's signed up yet?
Sure, I'll ring up. My darling, I'd like to call you my darling. Too bad your husband's in town. Hello? Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester. Say, Mr. Benny, I'm over here at CBS and they want to know if you've signed your contract yet.
Well, what does he say?
Still shaking. What's that, Mr. Benny? While I'm here at CBS, you want me to see if I can get you a kiss from Gene Autry's leading lady? But, Mr. Benny, but boss. Okay, if he don't know it's a horse, I ain't gonna tell him.
Now, look, this has gone far enough. You tell Mr. Benny that unless he signs that contract, the whole deal is off.
Okay. Mr. Benny, the man says if you don't stop shaking and sign the contract, you don't get the $4 million. What's that? Okay, boss.
Well, what is it?
Clear out the dressing room. Mr. Benny is now starching his fingers, sticking his hand in a vise, and he has Don Wilson sitting on his arm.
Hey,
Gene, who's this mountain gal ambling our way in the Don Loper ensemble?
Why, Bing, I'm surprised that you don't recognize her.
That ain't Daisy May Oakham, is it?
Well, Bing, this just happens to be a little gal who's really taking the country by storm with her records and nightclub appearances. A real nice Christmas package.
She's well wrapped.
Yeah. Ladies and gents, here is the Park Avenue hillbilly herself, Miss Dorothy Shea.
Hello, fellas.
Howdy, ma'am. Pleased to meet you.
Thank you, Mr. Autry.
I'm Crosby. This is Autry. Oh.
Say, Dorothy, I understand you come from a little town in Tennessee. Does Hollywood scare you?
Well, the gals in long skirts were a little strange at first.
I think the American male has been framed. Well, I know one fellow who goes into restaurants and orders chicken just so he can look at legs again. Could have said limbs, huh?
Careful what you say there, partner.
Got to be careful.
Remember that Dorothy's just a simple country gal.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry about me, Gene. I have sort of a philosophy. Whether you're in Tennessee, Hollywood, or Kalamazoo, never trust a man.
Oh, now, don't say that, man. Why, just look at Gene and me.
That's right. Yes, sir. Why, us men in the West are perfect gentlemen.
Yep, you can always trust the strong, silent type.
Well, you can trust the silent type, but if they've got any strength at all, you got to watch them.
Well, Dorothy, Dorothy, I've really got to give you an awful lot of credit. You took the hillbilly song, dressed it up, made a real city dude out of it.
Well, thank you, Gene, but I think most people like the simple, homey songs anyway.
Well, I guess you're right. Maybe I should try more of those homey songs.
How'd you like to hear the style to which I'm accustomed?
Oh, wonderful, Dorothy. Do it nice.
Okay. You're wanting me to marry you, and so before I give my answer, I must know. Will you treat me in the style to which I'm accustomed if I agree to be your loving spouse? For my training has been gentle in a manner continental, so you'll have to get them goats out of the house. Will you stay the same old way to which I'm accustomed, fastidious as only you can be? For there's not the slightest doubt you have a certain air about you, and especially when you wear that DDT. Anything plebeian is like Greek to me. My background has been one of great eclat, so you'd better watch your grammar when you speak to me. Just remember it is I to whom you're speaking at. Will you treat me in the style to which I'm accustomed? Remain the same old Casanova type. For I never knew what bliss is till you thrill me with your kisses. But I wish you'd try it once without your pipe. Will you treat me in the style to which I'm accustomed? With furs and diamonds fit for any queen. For you really did enslave me with that diamond ring you gave me. But the second day my arm was turning green. Will you treat me in the style to which I'm accustomed, and comfort me and calm my girlish fears? For I'm very, very fragile, so you mustn't be too agile, or I may be forced to batten down your ears. The years I spent in Paris were so gay to me. The language is my special pride and joy. So if you should say parlez-vous français to me, well, you might think that I'm a native when I answer, oi. Will you treat me in the style to which I'm accustomed? For wealth is really all I've ever known. Yes, my life was milk and honey. We had barrels full of money, 'cause my father used to always print his own. And when the cops got father, he whispered with a smile, get someone to keep you, to keep you in your custom. merry sound.
Ah, yes, sir. Mighty fine there, Dorothy. Folks, since the spirit of Christmas is international, we thought it'd be a real treat to bring a couple of our good friends down from Canada. This young couple has been on the air for the Wrigley people in Canada for some time now. It's a pleasure at this time to introduce you to Lisa Roy and Jack Norman. Get out. Well, just want you to make yourselves right here at home, folks. Lisa, Chuck,
merci.
Merci beaucoup.
And I would like for you to meet Bing Crosby.
Ah, bonjour, Monsieur Crosby.
Oh, Monsieur Crosby, je suis très heureuse de vous voir enfin. Je vous admire tellement au cinéma.
Oui.
Et nous profitons de l'occasion pour souhaiter un joyeux Noël à nos amis du Canada.
Oui.
Vous et M. Autry êtes toujours les favoris des Canadiens, et les Canadiens vous adorent.
Oui, I bet she runs out before I do. Jack, don't you think that right now would be a good time to send Christmas greetings to all of our friends up in Canada?
Well, we'd love to, Jean. We'd love to. Of course, I would like to say Merry Christmas, or as we say in French, Joyeux Noël à tout le monde.
And I would like to add, merci d'avoir été si gentil pour nous. Merci à vous tous.
Folks, in English, that means howdy.
Well, kids, the last Indian runner that reached the stockade brought reports of your smashing successes up there. Why don't you give us a little sample
was
of
better than that
what you do to fracture the folks, huh? Let's hear some of this.
Well, stuff. All right, Mr. Crosby. I will at least start by singing La Vie en Rose. In America, it's You Are Too Dangerous, Chérie.
Oh, this sounds lethal.
TNT.
Everybody duck.
Dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas. Je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours. Et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur. Une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré pour la vie. Et dès que je l'aperçois, alors je sens en moi mon cœur qui bat, des yeux qui font baisser les murs, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche. Voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Pour tout dangereux, chérie, tout dangereux pour moi. I know I can't resist you. You're too beautiful, chérie. What will become of me? Will I regret I kiss you? Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est toi pour moi, moi pour toi dans la vie. Tu me l'as dit, l'as juré pour la vie. Et dès que je t'aperçois, alors je sens en moi mon cœur qui bat.
Wonderful, Lise. Somehow I understood every word.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, mesdames et messieurs. And now Jacques Normand will sing
Il faut de tout, which means it takes all time to make a world.
Il faut de la pierre pour les sculpteurs, il faut des poings pour les boxeurs, des notes pour les musiciens, des océans pour les marins, il faut des gendarmes pour les voleurs, et des gibets pour les tueurs, il faut l'impôt, assurément, pour vous enlever tout votre argent, il faut de tout pour faire un monde, des brunes, des blondes, des hommes de taille moyenne, des femmes frisant la soixantaine, des petits nains et des géants, des timides et des truands, il faut de tout pour faire un monde, des minces, des rondes, faut de tout évidemment pour faire un monde. Il faut les ponts pour les clochards, il faut du vin pour les pochards, de l'amour pour les amoureux, des thermomètres pour les fiévreux, des discours pour les ministères, des marches pour les militaires. À chaque pays, une capitale, au Canada, pour Montréal. Il faut de tout pour faire un monde, des brunes, des blondes, des hommes de taille moyenne, des femmes frisant la soixantaine, des petits nains et des géants, des timides et des truands. Il faut de tout pour faire un monde, des minces, des rondes. Oh, de tout évidemment pour faire un monde, pour faire un monde.
Sort of the French Jack Smith, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I see you do all right with that.
Yeah. Oh, I kick it around. Yes, I'll tell you later. Gene, what are your plans at this moment? What's the caper?
Hmm? Well, I think right now we ought to have just a little encore from the young ladies who helped us out on that Santa Claus a little while ago. You know the old saying is, two is company, three is the Andrews sisters. Step up, gals, and introduce yourselves.
Well, I'm Maxine.
I'm Patty.
I'm hungry.
Oh. Hungry? Well, Laverne, the girls told me that you had a big turkey just before you came over here.
Yes, but being on this end of the trio, I didn't come out so good.
I know what you mean. I used to be anchor man on the trio myself. How you doing since you got back from abroad, gal?
Swell.
So you got the arrangement of Jingle Bells with you today?
Yeah, we're off.
Well, wait for me. Wait for Dad.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ring in a one-horse open sleigh.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtails ring, making spirits bright. What fun to ride and sing our sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. All the fields we go, and we're laughing all the way. Bells on bobtails ring, making spirits bright. Oh, what fun to ride and sing our sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Oh, we have a lot of fun. Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Jingle bells, jingle, all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Hey, that's all I've got time for today. Please, have a safe and sane holiday season. slow down, put your feet up, have a cup of cocoa, and listen to some old-time radio. Hey, enjoy yourself. See you next time.